Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
He looks determined without being ruthless. Something heroic in his manner. There's a courage about it. Doesn't look like a killer. Comes across so calm. Acts like he has a dream. Full of passion.
You don't trust me, huh?
Well, you know why.
I do. We're not supposed to trust anyone in our profession anyway.
Peace, 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 and welcome to The Rematch, which is part of the BasketballNews.com podcast network. On The Rematch, you'll hear in-depth interviews with notable names from all walks of life. Because sometimes the media just doesn't get it right. The Rematch is that second opportunity to clarify, put things in proper context, correct fake news or misreported controversy. The media still exists as the most powerful entity on earth because they control the minds of the masses. I'm Matan Thomas. And the full truth is what we are aiming to catch. Many media stories omit details that would dilute their clickbait roar. And that's why there's a need for The Rematch. Today, I sat down with my former teammate, Courtney Alexander. He was the leading scorer in the nation coming out of college. And we both got drafted together in Dallas by Mark Cuban in the 2000 NBA draft. Courtney opened up about how money, ego, partying, and the NBA lifestyle ruined his career. It's a cautionary tale that every young athlete should hear and pay close attention to. This was a great interview. Hope you enjoy. Courtney Alexander, CA. How you doing, sir?
E, man. How you doing, man? I'm blessed, brother. Blessed. How you been?
I've been good, man. I've been blessed, man. It's been a long time, you know.
I mean,
there's been, you know, we started our NBA journey together, and we're gonna get into all of it. So thanks for coming on The Rematch, BasketballNews.com and Fly TV. Where are you living now?
So, family is right now in Florida, but we permanently reside in Atlanta. So Atlanta has been home, man, since I left college, actually.
Okay.
So it's been over 20 years now. We've been in Atlanta.
Man, it's crazy. Yeah. I just interviewed Q Rich and Darius Miles, Knuckleheads, and we was talking about that 2000 NBA draft. And I'm looking at the pictures. I'm like, man, we look so young.
I know.
Goodness gracious.
Hey, man, I had at the time, man, he was like maybe 2.5,
Yeah.
And he just turned 24 years old, man. So that just kind of lets you know.
It's crazy, man.
He's standing like 6'8 now. He actually plays ball as well, man. So it's just crazy how time just flies, bro. It's crazy.
I remember y'all had the matching Chris White, you know, suits on. I thought it was so dope. And it was,
We did. You know what's crazy about those suits, man, is, and I think I've heard it before, they actually were cream. They weren't white. I guess people, I don't know what it was, but I remember hearing something about white suits, man, but they were actually cream suits.
Is that right?
But I'm going to tell you what's crazy, man, is like, that was, and we'll get into this stuff, man, but that was like me. Like, and what I mean by that, I was way more concerned with my style than I was my game. And it's and it's so sad, bro, because had I given my game as much attention as the fame that I wanted, I could have been a better player, man. You know what I mean? So we'll get into all of that.
We'll get into all of that. But, you know, you were someone who, you know, blossomed early. You know, I mean, you were leading the nation in scoring. I mean, you had a special gift. It wasn't like, you know what I mean? So you put the work in, you know, in high school, in college. I mean, to lead the nation in scoring, that's not an easy task.
No, it's not easy, but I got to tell you, man, and it's crazy because I actually, while I did have a lot of success early on, I wasn't a McDonald's All-American. Mm. So I remember watching my class of 95, who some think is the best class ever, high school class ever. KG and Ron Mercer and Robert Tractor Trailer. So many different guys came out of that class. Paul Pierce, Vince Carter. I was actually at home watching McDonald's game like a lot of people. So it's just interesting, man, that, you know, me not being in that game, you would have thought would have put a necessary fire in my belly, which it may have back then, man, but just not, you know, what I actually needed to keep that humility. Because what ended up happening, while, you know, my college career did take off, especially toward the latter part of my years, man, this word called ego that I really want to get into a little bit later on really crept in to my game and my spirit, man. And that's what ultimately led to my demise as a hooper.
Wow. So that's a lot. And just even you describing that is such a, you know, contrast to the CA that I knew going back from that NBA draft in 2000. So we'll tell everybody a little bit of history of it. When we were both drafted, you know, we both got drafted to Dallas. I was the Mark Cuban's first pick ever. You was Mark Cuban's second pick ever. It was an amazing experience. You know, I'm sitting there, you know, and it's funny because I told this story to the knuckleheads, you know, Quinn Richardson and Darius Miles. Mm-hmm. So we're at the draft and I, you know, get drafted. They call my name. I go in that back room and they, you know, start interviewing and stuff like that. You know, first you walk across the stage, shake David Stern hand, you go to the interviews in the back. So there's that back part with all the other people who are drafted, right? And when I first met you, I was like, hey, okay, so you going to Dallas, what's going on? And your face, it was no joy, no happiness. He was like, what's up? He shook my hand and he kept going. And I'm just standing there like, oh. Like, and Q Rich looked over and saw, he was like, hey, man, I'll give you a pound, man. It's all right, man. What's going on? Because it was like, you kind of left me hanging. And he was like, not happy. And I wanted you to explain, what was your emotions? What was going on with you at that draft? You know, I know you didn't go as high as you thought you were going to go, but tell me about all the emotions that were going on that night at the draft.
I think the biggest emotion that I can remember was, I'll share two of them with you, frustration that may have ended up in anger. Because as you mentioned, bro, like it was my desire to be a higher pick, right? And it was so crazy, bro, that like I literally, that's an instance, that's a moment in all of our lives that we wait and we work endlessly for. And I was so wrapped up in myself, bro, like I don't even remember Mr. Stern calling my name.
Oh, wow.
Like I didn't hear my name. I was so messed up in my head. So emotionally, man, I was frustrated. I was angry. So much to where I not only did I take it from myself, but my emotions and the way that you're supposed to, you know, even embrace your family. Like I remember kind of giving my own mother like a half-hearted kind of hug that you give a distant relative or friend. Didn't pound everybody at my table as I was supposed to. I missed the moment. And what's crazy, E, is that is exactly why I was out the league in 5 years, because I went in with the wrong attitude. And because of this money that I coveted so much and wanted so much, the mixture of those two things derailed that career, bro.
Wow. And, you know, you mentioned the money. And so yeah. we, you know, when we first got there, you know, we were polar opposites, just to, you know, let everybody know we were right. So I was of the mindset, okay, you know, I don't know how long this is going to last. I'm not going to spend anything. I just wanted to hold on to anything. And I got my degree in business management at Syracuse University. And so my mindset was always, okay, how do I invest money? How do I keep it? How do I make sure that I don't run out? How do I budget myself? What do I do? You know, so that was what I was thinking all through college. I never liked math classes. I hated math when I was younger. In high school, middle school, literally, I hated math. Wow. And, you know, it's funny because my kids now hate math. You know what I'm saying? Like, they was just singing this song, you know, although, you know, J. Cole, but they was like, math is the devil. So they was like off of J. Cole's, you know what I mean? And but that we don't like math. Wow. But I took nothing but math courses in at Syracuse because I wanted to prepare myself. So when I got to Dallas, it was like I was the polar opposite of you, where I was just, okay, I don't want to spend anything. I was like, you know, I remember we got the little trading card deal money.
Yeah.
So I took that money. I had a little N1 money. I took that together. I bought my mom a house and you know, but she kept working, and I bought a car. I bought Baron Davis's old car.
Yeah, I remember.
And then I rented my apartment while I was there, and then that's it. Everything else, I just spent just the card money. And when we met, it was like we both were like, "Huh, you're different." You know what I'm saying? What was your mentality when we first got to Dallas?
My mentality was I wanted to look like a pro in the street, but I didn't want to practice like a pro in the gym. And it's ill, E, that I'm talking like this, man, but one of the main reasons why I'm here with you right now is because I know that there's some people out there, or even if it's just one, that's more than enough for me, that need to hear this story. I think, you know, there's a lot of reasons that we can attribute to why we do certain things. I can only share mine. And I went to Dallas with an attitude of entitlement. I was better than I felt like people thought I was. And because people didn't reward my what I felt was my talent, I think the way I coped, E, was like renting out big old limos for me and my homeboy to go party. Instead of doing what pros do, and especially rookies, especially when you play for a coach like Nelly, who wasn't a big fan of playing rookies at the time.
He didn't like rookies.
He didn't.
That's what it was. He didn't like us.
So you can only imagine how he felt about me.
Well, listen, do you remember when we came in the meeting with him? It was me, you, D. Harvin, Eduardo. The first thing he said was, "I don't like rookies." And we looked at each other like, that's the first thing that you said?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So it's just crazy, man. So it's like I'm in a situation, man, where instead of fighting back on the court, I felt like, you know what, I'm going to take this to the street. And that thing became real toxic for me. And I think I really fell in love with it more than the game. And it's funny, we're talking about this thing called money and how we were polar opposites. I like to consider it to be more of you were mature and I was immature. Let's just call it what it was, right? So I was so immature that I literally, the summer after my rookie year, I ran out of money. I had to go back to the bank to get a loan as a bridge to get me to our following contract money. Wow. Which was November. Yeah. So, and that's something that a lot of people don't know, but that's how much of a partier and spender I was. And again, it's sad, man, because I think, you know, there are different guys that come in with poor spending habits, but ultimately they learn, and the love of the game trumps all of that stuff. I just kind of kept going down that path that was starting in Dallas.
Wow. You know, yeah. I remember one time, I think we were going, I think it was me, you, and D-Harv.
Okay.
And we were going out somewhere. And okay. So the guy at the front, they were trying to hustle us. And they okay. were like, okay, you can park here and you have to pay some ridiculous amount. And then yeah. I'll let you get into the front of the line for another ridiculous amount. And I was like, wait a minute, don't pay him that. Yeah. I was like, are you crazy? We just park right here and then we just walk the line even that long. Yeah. What? Yeah. What? Yeah. Don't pay him that. And it was so weird to you that I would say that. And it was just like, you know, don't worry about it. And I'm like, well, no, he can worry about it. He's trying to hustle us. And
maturity.
I mean.
So for me, that's the look of the pro, though, right? Like, we're not supposed to wait. Like, it's okay to pay extra. We got VIP parking, whether it's a hustle or not. Like, that's the look of kind of what I'm talking about, right? So it's weird, E, because that's what I wanted. Like, mm-hmm. that's what I was really after back then when I was 23, 24 years old. It's crazy, man, when you really think about it.
Wow. So, you know, and you know, for people that don't know, we had, you know, a few bumps while we were there.
Yep.
And it was a combination of you had never really met anybody like me and maybe vice versa. And it was just, I don't know. It was, I mean, from that point on, it was like we had a mutual respect for each other.
Yeah.
I felt, you know what I mean? But I think, but before then, it was just a, I don't know, how would you describe it? Like, how do you describe led up to our incident?
E, man, I think, again, I was so wrapped up in me. Like, everybody else really wasn't important.
Okay.
If I liked you, we was cool, but you know, even with some of the relationships I had, it would be a transactional type of relationship, meaning I had to get something out of that. Mm-hmm. That's just the cat I was, man. And so as far as you go, one thing I remember about you, though, it's a few things that I remember. I remember you telling me about buying Baron Davis's car.
Okay.
And at the time,
that was like the most ridiculous thing you had ever heard of.
Listen. Why in the world would you buy a used car from another pro? Like, for me, I'm like, what in the world? That makes no sense, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, if I'm watching you from afar, it's like, yo, this dude, he began with the end in mind, which is wisdom to me. And it's amazing to me that you had that in you coming into what we came into. When you're surrounded by everything, I feel like really but that. And that's why you've always stood out, I think, because you had a not only a maturity, but it was almost like an audacity to say, man, like, I'm just gonna rock different. I'm just gonna be different. Like, I'm not a follower. And that's why you continue to step and walk the way you do. I'm locked. I'm focused on what I do, what I want to do. You ain't here to hurt nobody. You just kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And it's just wisdom that you have locked in you. Whereas for me, it's amazing, man. And I tell people this, like, I worked my entire life on the court to be a pro, but I lack the life lessons, man. I lack the certain things that, you know, all professionals have to have, the ability to work with others, you know, respecting authority, all of those intangibles, those ingredients that anybody got to have in any workforce, man. I really lacked in those areas.
Wow. But, you know, but one thing I do remember, like, you talk about the things that you remember about me. I remember after our incident, we had our incident in the locker room, and then afterwards, I remember you were like at a shooter, you were shooting. It was at practice. So I think you were shooting and you turned around to me and you said, hey, to show you what kind of dude I am, I'll pay your fine. Cause we both got fined.
Okay.
And you was like, I'll pay your fine. And I was like, no, that's cool. You don't have to do that. You know what I mean? I appreciate it. And then we had like a conversation after practice. after that. And then we just talked. And then we were cool ever since then.
Yeah.
And I think it was a thing where we from it, it took that incident for us to like kind of see each other, so to speak, if, that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you might be right, yo.
I saw you differently.
Yep.
And then you saw me differently.
Sure, sure.
And it was just like a mutual respect type of thing. So then after that, fast forward, we got both all get traded. It was like six of us, you know what I mean? For Juwan Howard.
Yep.
And we're in DC.
Yeah.
And you know, it's interesting because when we're in DC and MJ comes out of retirement, you know what I mean? You know, Kwame Brown got drafted. Yeah. I just interviewed him, which was a whole lot going on. Wow. But I remember seeing a lot of stuff going on. And there, I kind of remember you kind of being within your own, so to speak. But you was trying to see, okay, MJ, I see him moving the way that I want to move. This is just, now you can tell me if I'm wrong. But I'm watching because I was an observer. Remember back when in DC, what a lot of guys say, I didn't really say much, right? And that's true. I didn't.
You never really said a whole lot.
But I would observe.
So I'd be
sitting there just watching dynamics of everybody, you know. And so I'm watching you interacting with MJ and everything like that, and almost trying to do what he does.
Yeah.
And carry yourself the way that he carries himself, as far as the, you know, 45 different suits, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way that you walk, the way that, you know, just the swag type of thing, movement. Am I right? Or that's,
you know, the interesting thing about Michael, man, is that anybody that knew me knew that he was my guy growing up, right? And it was interesting though, E, because when I finally had an opportunity to play with a guy that was my guy growing up, it actually was the opposite of what you would expect. Now, clearly there were things that maybe I was mesmerized by and all of that kind of stuff. But E, truth be told, and I tell people this, I actually didn't enjoy the basketball experience my second year in the league, because this cat named Michael Jordan, again, you got to understand the frame of mind I had back then. Michael was taking away from my shine. Mm. If we remember, we got traded from Dallas. I was not playing in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up my rookie year, the last like maybe 25 games with the Wizards. You were hurt then.
I was hurt, right.
But I played well enough to actually make one of the all rookie teams and all of this kind of stuff. And don't get me wrong, the second year, the year that Michael came back to play, I was super excited that he was playing with us, but it grew into disdain for the fact that I felt like he was overshadowing me. And that right there should let you know that my time in the league was growing short. Because and what I mean by that is what I was supposed to do was take whatever role Doug Collins was going to give me, and what I was supposed to do, because of the talent, that gift that you spoke about that I was born with to play, me and this dude played the same position. Back then, me and that guy had a relationship that people don't even really know. Michael and I had a decent relationship. I initially met him when I was in college. So our relationship went back a little bit.
Okay.
But I cared not to ask him for any advice. See, I cared not to do what the late, great Kobe Bryant did from L.A. Mm. And I'm in the locker room with this dude. Like we're on planes with this dude. I chose to not ask for any advice from him. But what I chose to do was cop an attitude because things weren't going my way.
You know, it's interesting. And I was just talking about this with someone because we were comparing at that time you and Richard Hamilton. And so both of y'all were there, and then MJ played both of y'all positions, right? Now, talent-wise, to be honest with you, I thought you were a little bit ahead of Richard Hamilton. This is my personal opinion.
Okay.
As far as a scorer, as far as the way that you would jump, your athleticism and how high you would jump on your jump shots, Okay. And the way that you would elevate and you would jump over people, okay. y'all both contribute. So for one thing, if MJ would have never came back, it would have been completely different. It would have been y'all two. You know what I mean? But then that part, there had to be one or the other because MJ played the other position. Yeah. So then I'm looking. Now, remember, I'm observing everything. We had no conversation with that. I'm just sitting there in my locker looking at everything, right? So Rip played it to where he was going to get wisdom from MJ or ask mm-hmm. him advice or take different things. Mm-hmm. Where you played it where it was like you against MJ.
Yes, yes.
And and that was the only reason why Rip got the nod instead of you, in my opinion. Because as far as talent-wise, as far as putting the ball in the hole, which was both what was considered what y'all needed to do at that time, and the system that they wanted to play. Remember, Rip liked to run off all these screens and then get open and stuff like that, once you pull up and everything like that. MJ didn't really want to do all that. He wanted to run like almost a simulated triangle.
Yeah.
Right? And play off him. So the movement and the stuff, and you creating your own shot and then elevating everybody, it in theory, that worked better for the offense of what MJ wanted to do, right? I don't know if I don't know if anybody's ever told you this or what this breakdown even, you know, is saying to you. But for me seeing it, yeah. I'm like, huh, this is interesting. And that's all I'm saying. I'm watching it all play out, and then it played out where Rip got more of the nod. But I think you worked better, actually, in the system that MJ wanted. Did you ever think of that?
I never thought about it like that. I've never had anybody break it down to me the way you're breaking it down to me.
But does it make sense now that what I'm saying?
I understand where you're coming from, but I'm going to tell you something about one of the differences between me and Rip Hamilton back then. Rip did Rip.
Right.
Like, whether Michael was on the court or not, he still played to his own strength. Okay. He still came to work every day. See, Rip didn't do like me, I'm sure. Rip didn't go into Doug Collins' office and say, we don't have to get along, we just have to work together.
Is that what you said? Okay. Yeah, so, no, Rip didn't do that.
So you got to understand, man, I was a different cat back then. And there were so many different things and variables that led to Rip not necessarily playing over me. I don't like to look at it that way. I like to look at it like me not playing. I never gave myself a chance, man. It was never about Doug Collins, that, you know, and back then that's who I would try to attribute things to. It was never about the fact that Michael Jordan came back and played for the Wizards. It was never about, you know, me and Rip Hamilton playing the same position. It was never about none of those things, man. It was about the fact that that same dude that walked across that stage that we talked about a little bit ago, I wasn't ready. If somebody asked me to define what a pro was, I wouldn't be able to tell you, other than maybe the type of crib you're supposed to live in and the kind of car you're supposed to drive.
Wow.
Other than that, I couldn't tell you the intangibles of a pro basketball player. I couldn't.
Wow. So I remember, and this is no disrespect to Rip. Rip was the truth. You know what I mean?
But it's
more of a testament to you as to far as the talent that you had.
I appreciate that. And from what I am observing.
So later on that you get traded to, was it New Orleans?
Yes.
To New Orleans.
Yep.
And down in New Orleans, you tore your Achilles.
I tore my Achilles actually my second year in New Orleans in training camp.
Okay.
So not my third year, but my fourth year, what ended up actually being my contract year. I tore my Achilles during that training camp.
Okay. Walk me through that and what happened after you tore your Achilles, or maybe leading up to it.
Leading up to it, man, it was weird, E, because I remember experiencing some discomfort in my Achilles. Now, I don't remember exactly which one it was, but I remember I tore it. I tore it in a preseason game. It's actually interesting because Teron Lue, I remember at the time, he played for the Orlando Magic, and we were playing Orlando in Orlando, and he was actually on the bench. I went up for a regular jump shot on the baseline, and T. Lou actually told me he heard a pop. It sounded like a gunshot.
Oh, wow.
And I tore it. But what ended up happening was I came back to Atlanta. I did all of my rehab. By the grace of God, man, like I was healed and back running and jumping like old times 6 months after.
Wow.
Yeah, I was back, you know, doing my thing, and feeling rejuvenated. Worked hard that summer, and came back the following year on like a partial guarantee, which really should have got my attention, on a partial guarantee to go to the Sacramento Kings to play for the Kings. But wouldn't you know, E, on my flight back to Sacramento, I actually missed the flight because I was out partying the night before.
Really?
Yeah. So, and just real quick about the whole Achilles tear. I didn't know it then, but that was actually the beginning of something that God ultimately did in my life. I didn't recognize it then, but I actually believe that that was the beginning of a spiritual healing for me, because I needed that. I needed to be removed from everything and everybody and to literally be sat down and immobile. Now, clearly, I just shared with you the situation in Sacramento. I didn't get it then. And one of the reasons why I know I didn't get it is because during that Sacramento King training camp, I popped a couple tendons in the bottom of the other foot, which was a year after. And that was pretty much the end of my NBA career.
Now let me, before that, you know, you said you missed it, the flight, because you were partying.
Yes.
And I remember you partying a lot in Dallas. Was the going out? Well, I mean, just going out a lot. The partying, you know what I mean? The limos, like an old school Mace video. You know what I mean? Like it was crazy. Just out. And was that kind of a form of therapy for you? Like, was it, you know, or was it just that you just like to go out and party and live that lifestyle? Like, what was it that you were drawn to so much with the partying?
You know, I really think a lot of it had to do with, I remember one morning I was in New Orleans and I was talking to my mother on the phone. And like I mentioned to you before, I don't remember a lot of things back then, but I do remember some things that what I would like to consider, they're pretty important things that I remember from back then that kind of stuck to me. I remember my mom Dukes telling me, and I'm sure this didn't delight her in saying this, man, but you're living the life, but you're not a pro. I remember my mother telling me that. And anybody that know me and my mom, like, that's like to this day, like it's just a certain type of relationship that we have.
Right.
As not only mother and son, but like as far back as I can remember, she was always there for me, always there for me during basketball times, basketball games. Help keep my head through certain situations. And I remember her telling me that. So I say all of that to say, E, like, that was part of the partying. That's what we were supposed to do. Oh, like, that's what it looks like. Now, I'm sure this is, like, foreign to you. This is, like, what are you talking about? This was my thought back then. Now, again, this is really important to me. Part of the reason why, or a majority of the reason why I'm doing this interview is I know that there's people out there that need to hear this stuff, man, because there's some cats, whether they be in the NBA, whether they be in the MLB, whether they be in the NFL, they're doing the same stuff. But I just don't, I haven't found a lot of cats that's sharing some of their trials and tribulations. I recognize through all of those trials and tribulations, they were actually meant to help prevent other people from doing it, if that makes any sense.
Oh, like,
so for me, That's what it was. So it's whether you're calling it the Mace video, that's what it looked like. A rap kind of cat in the NBA. Right. Like are you hooping or are you
right.
Like what are you doing? Like because you and this is when again, this is these are all signs that you know that your time here is gonna be limited. You're coming off of DMPs.
Right, right.
In Dallas. Think about it. You said I was partying a lot in Dallas, as I was. Mm-hmm. Off of DMP CDs, which just so the folks out there, they understand, do not play coach's decision.
Right.
So I went from not playing in a game to partying that night. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why Mark Cuban and those guys had to get me out of there, because they understood. You can't invest in this type of guy. You just can't. Mm.
You know, it's hard to use your story to open up, to use yourself as an example for younger people. And I have a lot of respect for you for being able to do that. You know, something that my mother would always tell me growing up is that sometimes the things that you go through they aren't meant for you. They're meant to help somebody else.
Amen.
And she would always say that when I was younger. And I'd be like, what does that mean? Like, I don't even know what that means. But she would repeat it to me over and over again all the time. Yeah. And as I got older, it made sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's you're right. There are a lot of people, young people, high school gays. You know, I'm in the AAU world.
Yeah.
You know, coaching my son's AAU team. So I see it.
Yep.
And I see what they think
yep.
making it, quote unquote,
yep.
is
yep.
and how yep. you carry yourself. And they want to wear the, you know what I mean? Impress people. And they want to yes. wear ice everything and,
yes.
and
yes.
talk about the cars and talk about yes. all that. And that's their motivation
yep. Yep.
to be able to attain that.
That's right.
And
that's
so right. what you're doing as far as being open to talk about how that's not it. Like no. basically that's not what it's about. That's no. not it. That's like a fast track to, you know what I mean, a downfall. And it's more guys need to speak on this and speak to young people about this, because they'll young people listen more than I think people give them credit for if they're told. They see one thing, right? And they see it all the time. So that's what they're attracted to.
Yeah.
But they're not being told, you know, from experience, the other part of it, like the truth, like what you're doing right now. So I just want to take this pause just to say I definitely respect you.
I appreciate it.
For that. So talk to me about what happened after the Achilles tear, after you was no longer in the league. What happened then? How did you deal with no longer being in the NBA?
I think what ended up happening was everything that I did as a player, you can kind of multiply it by 10. And that's what you had post-career for like 5 years strong. And it got to a point where I was leading a very dangerous life for myself. But what ended up happening, E, about 10 and a half years ago, Christ made himself known in my life. Mm. And it was amazing because it was nothing that I did. It was nothing that I really sought out. Mm-hmm. The way I remember it was like he literally came in to my life and took desires from my heart that I had, whether it be partying, whether it be using profanity, whether it be listening to a certain type of music, whether it was just a lot of different things was actually shifted and blown out of my life. And that's ultimately what set me on the path that I am in now. I tell people, man, like I'm coaching now, which is,
okay.
I'm sure, comical to some people, like how in the world could, well, as your mother mentioned, and what I've learned over time, man, is that there's actually power and purpose in your pain. And if you'll make yourself available to it, it can work wonders for you. And I went through the NBA assistant coaches program, which kind of helps ready former players to be NBA coaches. And I've Been coaching in the NBA G League for the last 3 years.
Okay, that's great.
Grinding and learning. It's funny, man. Out of all of the things that we feel we know as former players, one of the first things I realized was just how much I didn't know about the game that I love so much, man. It's crazy. It really is, man. So, but ultimately, that's what happened, man, for me personally. So this whole basketball thing and this money thing, that wasn't my role. It wasn't supposed to happen for me. I actually also feel that, let's say I did, quote unquote, blow up as an NBA player, I truly believe that I could be and would be dead and gone right now.
Wow.
With more money. Because I'm a firm believer, you just become a bigger whatever you are with money.
Right.
I believe that. And so, yeah, So this whole coaching thing is for me, it's rooted in obviously the love of the game and growing. And I'm an ultimate competitor, man. I want to win every night out. But it stretches far beyond those four lines for me, man. Helping guys, you know, save their money, their family, and their career. Because what I found is that we have a hard time doing all three of those things simultaneously. Mm. Like family, money, and career. Like we struggle with doing all three successfully. Right. So it stretches far beyond. I'm big on building character through the game. And ultimately, that's because that's where I lack.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, you really have an amazing story to tell. And I really hope you continue telling it. I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, and we brushed over some of it. But I know there's a lot of details. I mean, this would be an amazing book, to be honest with you, that a lot of people need to be able to hear and read and to be able to really be able to study. And pay close attention to what, because, you know, if somebody is telling you, listen, I was in your shoes.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw these things happen. I went in this specific direction. So there's no reason for you to go into the same direction when I'm telling you exactly what was going to happen if you go down this direction. Do you know what I mean? But you're saying it from a firsthand standpoint. And that's where it resonates more. You know, it's a little different when somebody's telling you something and they're removed from it. Yeah. You know, I mean, young people are listening. Okay, this person is telling me, you know, don't do this, don't do this. They don't know nothing about this, but they tell you. But when you're talking firsthand, listen, I did this.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you that it resonates completely differently.
For
sure. I really want to encourage you to keep telling your story, keep pursuing. You know, I told, you know, you remember my wife, Nicole, she was my girlfriend then.
Yep.
When I told her that I'm going to interview, she was like, oh, that's great. Make sure you tell him I said hi. Yep. And it's good to hear that he's doing well, you know, and everything like that. So
I'm
definitely rooting for you. But
make sure you give her my best too, man.
Definitely, definitely. And so if you could just wrap up, you know, what you want people to know and learn from hearing your story. You know, what do you want people to know about you?
There's victory in my story. I think sometimes you have to lose to win.
Mm.
I think we got to be careful of what we define as a win.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, like, I'm married to a woman who I don't really deserve. Mm. She's been with me through all of this, bro. Back when we had our first child after my first year in college, I won. I'm a much better father today than I was back then. I won. I realize that there's so much stuff out here that's bigger than me. My life success is not rooted in what I do for me, it's what I do for others.
Wow.
I won. So there's victory in it. Now, my career didn't materialize as I would have hoped, but it wasn't supposed to.
Right.
I was saved from myself. You know what I mean? Wow. And I got so much peace in that, bro. And that's why I'm coaching now. And that's why I've taken the passion for the game and just kind of redirected it to feed others as opposed to trying to eat everything myself, if that makes any sense, man. Right. So, yeah, man. And really just that's really it, man. That's really it. It's not too complicated, man. It's real simple.
Well, that's amazing. I gotta just say, I'm so proud of you, man.
Appreciate you, brother.
Like, you know, just
you know, you and I different. So we came in this thing together.
Yeah,
and we're
standing
here now in our mid-40s and just kind of after all of the smoke clearing. Like, I'm so happy and proud. I just want to echo that same thing back to you. I've been watching you for a while from afar, but I'm not surprised because, again, you began with this stuff in mind. Right. I'm not surprised that you and the missus just had another anniversary. Me and my wife just had our 16th. And, yeah, man, so it's just – We're winning, man.
Right,
we're winning, and for me, that's ultimately what it's about for me.
Definitely. Yeah. No, we are definitely blessed, and you know, when you're blessed, you have to be a blessing to others, and
absolutely.
That's exactly what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Much success to you and your journey, and everything that you're about to do. And you're about to do some big things. You're about to affect a lot of people with your story.
Thanks, E.
And it's going to amaze you. The amount of people that you affect. I know you can't really see it right now because you know you want to affect some people, and you know you said if even just one person, it's going to be a lot of people who are affected for a long time from your story and influenced and inspired and everything else. So I can't say it enough. So thanks for coming on the show today.
For sure.
And I can't say it enough, man. Much respect to you.
Much love, E. I appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to The Rematch. You can find more episodes on basketballnews.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review. You can also find my articles on basketballnews.com, along with exclusive content from Kenyon Martin, James Posey, and more. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at AtonThomas36. Let me know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see as a guest. I would love your feedback.